Dear Mr. Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed an honor to speak at this prestigious scientific gathering. I fondly remember the first forum. I was traveling from the United States to Austria to attend a seminar in Salzburg. I met with the Rwandan delegation in Brussels before heading to Budapest for the forum. I was then chair of the physics department at Clark Atlanta University in the USA. I didn't know that, of course, that 2 years later, I'll be named the Rwandan Minister of Science and Technology, and then I'll be spending the better of the next decade implementing many of the recommendations outlined at the inaugural Budapest meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, new land, new landscape. Which countries have emerged? The past decade has experienced a dramatic change in the landscape of science and technology. New powerhouses have emerged. In fact, a growing number of developing countries are no longer called developing countries. They are now referred to as emerging economies. But words alone cannot capture the scope of what is happening. You no longer need to head north to access high-level scientific knowledge. China, Brazil, Malaysia, Mexico, South Africa, India, Turkey, to name just a few growing of list of countries, offer alternative destinations. Poor developing countries now have access to new knowledge at an affordable cost. Equally important, they have growing opportunities to use that knowledge in a way that will grow their economies and curb brain drain, creating a virtuous circle of progress that seems to be expanding. The theme of this session, the changing landscape of science, emerging powerhouse in science and technology, captures the tenor of the times in which we live. Yet the title of my talk, Building Capacity for Science, Technology and Innovation for Those Left Behind, also has relevance. The progress that has been made is undeniable, but it's also been uneven. So as we congratulate ourselves for that, for what has been done, we must remember that much more needs to be done if we are to achieve our ultimate goal, to build scientific capacity in all countries in a way that enables science and technology to become a global enterprise in the truest sense of the word. That is why I have chosen to focus on twice as wide-ranging capacity-building programs. The Academy's programs are based on this abiding principle. Scientists in all developing countries should be given opportunities to pursue productive and rewarding careers without having to leave their home countries. TWASS's strategy rests on three interrelated strategic initiatives. Doctoral training programs for students seeking advanced degrees conducted in collaboration with scientific institutions in the South. Research grants for scientists early in their career to help improve their prospect for success, and scientific mobility, which promotes South-South scientific exchange by enabling researchers to visit other institutions to foster collaboration. Ladies and gentlemen, the new landscape, what does it look like? As the 2010 UNESCO Science Report observed, achieving knowledge in intensive growth is no longer the sole prerogative of the highly developed countries. Statistics presented in the 2010 UNESCO Science Report tell the story. Between 2002 and 2008, the share of articles written by scientists from developing countries published in international peer-reviewed journals rose from 21% to 32%. Similar shifts occurred in the number of researchers and level of investment in research and development. For example, in 2002, scientists in developing countries accounted 30% of the global scientific community. By 2007, the proportion was 38%. Meanwhile, the developing world's global share of global domestic product spent on research and development, GERD, rose from 17.2% in 2002 to 23.7% in 2007. Notably, during the same 6 years period, the GRD in the least developed countries remained stagnant. are 0.1%. A closer look at the statistics reveals that this dramatic shift has been profoundly uneven. In fact, just 6 countries in the developing world account for more than 3/4 of the scientific articles published in peer-reviewed international journals authored by scientists from the South. China alone has more than doubled its output in scientific publication in less than a decade and is now responsible for 10% of the world's output. It recently outpaced both Japan and Germany to become the world's second most prolific source of scientific publications behind the United States. TWAS, on the other hand, has identified 81 developing countries that can be identified as scientifically lagging. The majority of these countries are in Africa and in the Islamic region. These are the countries that have been left behind in this new landscape. Moreover, even in those regions with limited scientific capacity, there are disturbing disparities in scientific output. 6 countries in Africa, led by South Africa and Egypt, account for 2/3 of the continent's scientific output. The stark reality is this: the North-South gap in scientific capacity is narrowing on a global scale. But the country-to-country gap remains as wide as ever. A bipolar world in science has become a multipolar world in science. The age-old problem of warning disparities between scientifically advanced and scientifically lagging countries persists only in a different configuration. Ladies and gentlemen, the new landscape. How did it happen? Developing and emerging economies now ardently believe that science technology are among the most important drivers of national economic growth and material well-being. Listen to the policy speeches of the leaders of China, India, and Brazil to hear how important science and technology has become. Examine the policies that have served as the foundation for their recent success. Scrutinize the plans they have presented for the future. Equally important, a lengthening procession of nations, Argentina, Chile, Indonesia, Malaysia, Mexico, South Africa, Turkey, for example, have joined them, sparking an historic global transformation that is reordering the world as we know it today. The vision that the leaders of these countries have articulated and the concrete measures that have taken to transform their visions into reality are infused with science and technology. No one would contend that science and technology is sufficient to spur the changes that we are currently witnessing. There is a need for political reform and intellectual ferment. There is a need for economic reform. There is a need for reform regulations and the rules under which trade take place. And there is the moral imperative to improve the status of women and other marginalized members of society, which brings great social and economic benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the new landscape, how can we navigate the terrain? I would now like to focus on what I consider to be one of the most significant enabling factors for any country to consider when embarking on a long-term range strategy for sustainable science-based development: the importance of strengthening a country's educational system, notably its graduate and postgraduate studies in scientific disciplines. I recently wrote a commentary for Nature in which I contended that among the most significant steps that developing countries could take to improve their prospects for sustainable development would be to expand opportunity for the young people to obtain graduate, postgraduate training in science and technology. I received several complimentary responses, especially about the inspirational tone, what I have said. My personal good fortune, for which I will be forever grateful, was derived from receiving a scholarship to attend the Catholic University of Louvain in Belgium at a critical stage of my life when I was in my 20s. The good news is that a growing number of countries are engaged in educational reforms that promise to significantly raise the number of students pursuing not just undergraduate university degrees, but master's and doctoral degrees as well. Equally encouraging, countries are pursuing a set of diverse strategies to achieve this goal. This provides other countries with a wide range of potential models to adopt. China has sent nearly 1 million students abroad over the past 3 decades and has now built a world-class infrastructure to welcome them back. India, through its innovation in science pursuit for inspired research, inspired program, offers stipends to encourage students to enroll in science courses and pursue career in science. And it now plans to build a nationwide fleet of central universities, institutes of technology, polytechnic, vocational schools, and skill development centers. Brazil has brought basic research and development closer together through the creation of innovative sectoral funds. The result has been greater economic return from scientific knowledge and technical know-how. The effort has had significant payoff in advancing such fields as oil, natural gas, exploration and production, microelectronics, pharmaceutical, biomass, and nanotechnology. I've been fortunate enough to see these policies at work during my visit to Trust Region's offices in Bangalore, Beijing, and Rio over the course of this year. The results are more than impressive. They are inspirational for those really who want to move forward. Ladies and gentlemen, the new landscape, welcoming those left behind. This new landscape should be welcoming and is welcoming those left behind. In the midst of this dramatic transformation in global higher education and scientific research, what can an organization like TWAS do, both on its own in collaboration with international organizations such as your own? Given the scope of what is going on in terms of education expansion and reform in many developing countries compared to the modest size of TWAS budget, you might think the answer is not much. But that would not be true. TWAS currently offers more than 300 graduate and postgraduate fellowships each year to students living in developing countries. The initiative is implemented in partnership with Brazil, China, India, Kenya, Malaysia, Mexico, Pakistan, and Thailand. The program, which enables students in scientifically lagging countries to study in centers of excellence in developing countries, represents one of the largest South-South fellowship programs in the world. TWAS spent an estimated $350,000 a year to cover transportation costs for grant recipients and administer the program. This investment, in turn, leveraged an estimated $3 million per year from the host countries to cover tuition, housing, and living costs. There are two things that are very striking about this program. First, how inexpensive it is. Where else would it be possible to garner such a lasting return on an annual investment of less than $500,000? The investment will enrich the mind and some of the most promising young people in poor countries. It will also continue to pay dividends for decades after the training is complete and the degree is bestowed. Beyond the research conducted by each of these individuals, think about the additional minds that are enriched by their teaching and training. Hundreds of teachers teaching thousands of students each year. It's not hard to see how quickly the figure adds up. And this leads me to my final thought. I'm convinced that we must substantially increase the supply of graduate and postgraduate fellowship for young people in developing countries. So this is my dream. It's a dream that calls for raising the number of fellowships offered by TWAS from its current 300 to 1,000 by adding 150 additional fellowships a year over the next 5 years. By the time TWAS celebrates its 40th anniversary in 2023, it hopes to have helped train more than 50,000 PhD across a broad range of fields in science and technology. Ladies and gentlemen, the new landscape, creating new horizons. TWAS believes that the new global landscape in science has created new horizons for science-based development and innovation that will benefit the entire world. And the academy is not alone. As Bill Gates noted earlier this month in a report presented to the G8 leaders in Cannes, France, and he says, countries like China, Brazil, India, and Mexico are in great position to work closely with poor countries because they have recent experience in reducing poverty, as well as enormous technical capabilities. This unique combination gives both the insight and skills to create breakthrough tools for development. And he went on to note that And he says, I am convinced we can create a new era in development. And he said, the reason for this optimism is this. The group of countries able to contribute resources to development is larger than ever. And the number of people who can spur innovation is much larger than in the past. This is the new landscape of science. The current global financial crisis has cast a shadow over the prospect for economic growth, especially in Europe and the United States. But if we widen the lens and extend the time frame, we have ample reason to believe that the world is on a path to a better future, thanks in large measure to the rapid growth in scientific and technological capacity in the developing world. This makes the world of institutions like ours more important than ever. And as a new director of TWAS, I very much look forward to partnering with you. Together, we can advance our common goals, goals that I believe are closer on the horizon than ever before. Thank you.